Hey, hey, Soul Tribe, welcome back. This is episode 1.4 of Beyond Deconstructing. I am T. Jamaica Pogue, affectionately known as Deconstructing Neuro. And on today's episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down with my friend, Jaden Dalbello. And before I flip it over to our time, I am going to give just a quick introduction. When I originally started my account back in February of 2022, my TikTok account, very early in my journey of being very open about my neurodivergence, her page came across and I instantly resonated with her and what she was talking about in regards to exposing things like narcissism and groupthink. And we touched on that in our conversation. So I'm super excited for you guys to learn more about Jaden, learn more about her self-penned TV series, God Bless America, and just have another eye into a conversation between two actually autistic people about our lived experience. So thank you guys again for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. Hope you guys enjoy. Thank you guys for coming back to another episode of Beyond Deconstructing. I am super excited for today's guest, Miss Jaden. You know me, JDB, on TikTok and on Instagram. And I'm going to turn it over to her to introduce herself and give us a little bit of background on who you are, Jay. Take it away.
Yeah, so I kind of started TikTok as not like a joke. I'm not going to call it a joke, but I wasn't serious about it. And then I had a couple videos just kind of do well in the algorithm in April. And I just started rolling with it because I honestly just felt really empowered by the platform and the community. And then realized that, damn, like this is, people slam this app so much. Like until I got on it, like people really were just like, oh yeah, fuck TikTok or whatever, especially in regards to like mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I hopped on it and I was like, damn, this is nowhere near the other people have described this app to me in the past. And it can be an amazing tool for activism and community. And so I just kind of rolled with it. And now I have 14.5K. And I started in April, which was like really good. Like that's yeah. Like pretty crazy. And I wrote a 12 episode TV show with two autistic protagonists called God Bless America. And I do a lot of chit chat about that show and where I'm at in regards to bringing this project into fruition, why the project is important. And I also simultaneously talk a lot about intersectionality and also like abuse resources. I feel like that's the primary stuff that I talk about on my TikTok. So yeah.
Awesome.
I'm a filmmaker, writer, but this TikTok thing is like a really good empowering platform for advocacy and like a good like side situation. But yeah.
Yeah, I definitely feel you on that, especially when it comes to connecting with the community. Obviously, that's how we met as well.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to get into your project, especially God Bless America, and a lot of the inspiration that you've pulled from your own life and from what you know in a little bit. But I first wanted to start by learning a little bit about your journey when it came to discovering or understanding your neurodivergence.
Yeah. So I've done, I've heard a lot of people talk about their experiences, like especially women who were like late diagnosed on TikTok. And I honestly, even with like my journey, I feel like I struggled to relate to like super high masking women because I think I was told by my psychiatrist that who diagnosed me with autism that, like I should have been flagged earlier and how autism looked in me, especially like pre-middle school, it wasn't a nuanced case whatsoever. I was very obviously like the weird kid with obsessive interests and had some very obvious sensory issues, like restrictive, repetitive behaviors. Like, it was, you know, if I was growing up now in the school system, they would flag me. Like, I would have been flagged right in daycare because I could not even be in daycare growing up, like, because of my autism. It was very clear from an early age that I did not function in the same way that everyone else did. And so I was misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder when I was 17, which is unethical, by the way. You're not supposed to die. You know that. Yeah. So I was led to believe that I had this disorder that I didn't really have. And a part of me was very grateful to finally have answers. And at the same time, myself and my parents always had this inkling at the back of our heads that this wasn't the right label for me. And even now when I look back on, or I look at BPD TikToks and stuff like that, I don't relate to them whatsoever. Even though I supposedly met the criteria strong because I was a traumatized, emotionally dysregulated 17-year-old girl. I just don't relate to anything. Not for me. And it was never for me. And then I kind of had a crisis in, like, when the pandemic first started. I began developing a whole bunch of chronic health issues, and I had to drop out of my dream college. And I was struggling with chronic pain that nobody knew how to define. The doctors, it was like just an anomaly how it is often with, like, marginalized women. You go to the doctor and then you're left with unanswers for years and years on end. It is an absolutely horrendous, terrifying experience, especially as someone who needs answers. Like, I'm the type of person that completely obsess over, I need to have an answer, I need to have an answer. And I'm also a hypochondriac. So that was a really tough year for me. And I was under a lot of duress. And then I was diagnosed with TMJ, which we talked about a little earlier. So it's basically like stress grinding or clenching of the jaw. And it's that a lot of the time it's co-occurring with being hypermobile, which I also have and a lot of other autistic people also have. Mm-hmm. And then I was so sick that I didn't leave the house. And then once I started to integrate myself back into the outside world, I was having panic attacks just walking down the street. Like, a motorcycle would come by and I would just flip out and start crying. Or I remember going down, like, there's this tunnel that went, like, I was walking down a tunnel where cars were going and it was on a busy street. And just the reverberation of the, like, cars against the tunnel, like, caused me the worst panic attack. And like, my sensory issues are definitely one of the, like, most prominent, like, dysfunctions of my autism. And they were really, like, showing its ugly head during the pandemic. Could not walk into, like, a CVS because of the fluorescence. Like, I was constantly shaking, could not even be in a park. Like, it was so, my sensory issues were so bad at one point. And it kind of, that in culmination with going back to my psychiatrist and my psychiatrist telling me, you don't meet criteria for BPD anymore, a lifelong personality disorder, which, I was like, then what the fuck is going on? Right. So I did some research and I came across Samantha Craft's list, which I'm sure the iconic resource in the community. And I was like, damn, like, this is, like, this is written about me, right? And I was like, you know, I had a lot of people during that time just tell me, like, you know, what if you just have ADHD and a sensory processing disorder? Like, you don't seem autistic, blah, 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 blah. But, like, it was so obvious as soon as I looked back on my childhood that this was not just ADHD and a sensory problem. It just was like, whoa. And then all of a sudden, reading experiences from like trans and femme presenting, like, autistic people, I was like, this is me. Like, I was like, there is no way that this is not me. And so it took me like a year to get a diagnosis because the wait lists were so backed up. But I and my family invested in a diagnosis because I was kind of in a crisis and they wanted papers on me if I was going outside, because at that time it was very likely for me to have sensory overload in public. And I was also having a lot of like PTSD episodes. I also have PTSD. So I would walk down the street at home and be scared that I was going to bump into my abuser and like other factors. And then that in combination with my sensory issues, like I was freaking out all the time. So I got diagnosed with PTSD and autism and ADHD and generalized anxiety disorder. And I was like, okay, this really makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Here I am now. It's definitely been a journey. It's really, it hasn't been easy. But through that, it's funny because, I mean, we could probably talk about this too. It's like you look at your parents or other people in your family and you're like, okay, I see you.
Yeah.
And you haven't known about this, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, firstly, thank you so much for your candor and sharing a bit of your journey there. But I'm glad you touched on something that that has been really funny to me, right, is that recognition. It's so easy to recognize other neurodivergent autistic people nowadays. Just because the more we learn about ourselves and how we think and how other people communicate, how the other side communicates, within a few moments, you know who you're talking to. You know, if it's like, it takes a lot of effort to communicate, or if the communication is just effortless. Yeah. And to me, that's like a key indicator that I'm speaking to somebody who gets it. And not necessarily that they're autistic, but like under the umbrella of neurodivergent. Yeah. Exactly. Because I feel like anyone who is considered neurodivergent, if you're not neurotypical, so if you're anybody their brain intrinsically, exactly. Yeah. But if your brain intrinsically thinks outside of the paradigm, you are able to get it a little bit easier.
Right,
you may not have that lived experience. You may not be able to know exactly, but you'll be close to it. And it's really cool. I love it because it's like finding your tribe, you know? Yeah. And I bring up TikTok a lot, but again, like this is something that's been a major part of my life. I've been kind of a hermit in the last few months. So most of my socializing has been through TikTok and through other social media. But I'm grateful to platforms like TikTok because it has opened up the wider community of autism, and it's helped with the mission of like deconstructing neurodivergence, which is deconstructing what we think of when we hear autism. You know, the face of autism is what I call it. And it's that very stereotypical thing that excludes people like you and me, that causes so many women to be misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder or NPD or so many other like mishmash of incorrect diagnoses because we don't fit the face of autism. And I feel like those stereotypes also disadvantage the people who do fit those stereotypes too, because then they get boxed into that one little category and we don't see them from the multifaceted people that they are as well. They still get put into a box, but you know, sometimes people see that, oh, well, they have it a little bit easier because it's easier to recognize that they're autistic. But is it really? Because then they get stuck with ABA because they're diagnosed when they're two, you know, or they get stuck with other things. So that's a conversation we can have as well about like late versus early diagnosis.
No, it's all fucked. It's truly all fucked. All of it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, because you said you didn't get diagnosed with the proper diagnosis until you were an adult. So yeah. Technically, you're late diagnosed as well.
Yeah.
So like, have you ever had those thoughts of it, like, man, if they would have just gotten it right sooner, things would have been better, like.
Yeah, I think what I would have been most happy with was to get like resources and skills for not only myself, but also my parents, who I've clearly inherited ADHD and autism from. Like, imagine just a family that loves each other so much. And it's clearly evident that myself and my parents love each other, but there was a lot of like interpersonal communication issues and traumas that like resulted out of that. due to just like our communication difficulties. And I think that's more than anything why I would have probably wanted an early diagnosis, as well as like my learning disabilities. Like that would have been great to have accommodations, because I suffered in school a lot. But I at this point in my journey, I don't look back and go, I wish things were different. Because as much as it would have been awesome to have those skills, I also do feel like everything happens for a reason. And I know that at this point, there's nothing I can do. I can't change the past. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to utilize these skills and the fact that I am the first one in my family to be diagnosed with this as something to help my own family and my future generations of my children help cope with like neurodivergency and stuff like that. But that's sort of where I'm at. I think I definitely had a lot more resentment but at the same time, I've had a lot of other autistic friends that were earlier diagnosed, and they also have like a lot of trauma. Like it does not like absolve people from other people taking advantage of you, treating you like shit, suffering in school, suffering interpersonally. It does not absolve you from that. But what you do have is skills, I guess, in contrast to people who are later diagnosed. But it's, I don't really like people like comparing the two or making one out to be worse than the other, I think, at this point.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that's where I'm at too. Like, we all go through that, like, what if I would have just, but at some point you have to realize, yeah, there's nothing you can do about what happened in the past other than be able to reprocess it through this new reframe lens of understanding that you're autistic. And that helped me at least give myself a lot more grace about a lot of things that I used to beat myself up over for. And I'm like, well, it's not just because I am broken or I'm just like this deficient person. It's because I literally just work differently and this world does not accommodate me. This society does not accommodate me. And so I struggled mightily and continue to struggle in a lot of ways, but at least now I understand what it is and I can put measures in place to try to advocate for myself going forward. And in learning that, it's what made me want to help other people advocate for themselves as well by sharing my story and not being afraid to be honest about the connections that I was making and the experiences that I was having, because I knew it couldn't have just been me. You know, for so long, it felt like it was just me because, you know, I suffered, like a lot of us, were very internal. We're in our own little worlds a lot of the time. And so I didn't share a lot of the things that I struggled with for so long. And so it felt like it was just me. But then I get online and the algorithm pins me down very quickly. You know, and I start.
I saw this one TikTok that was like, how come my bullies at school and the algorithm on TikTok knew that I was autistic before I did?
Period. That's hilarious.
What the fuck?
But like, facts, like, you know why? Like, I know why the neurotypicals did. Have you read Unmasking Autism by Devin Price?
I've listened to excerpts from it off of people reading it, but yeah, I definitely have to read that. I've been behind on a lot of
things. It's a must read. It's a must read. Please do. Because there's a part in there where they talk about, there's a study where neurotypical people, it's proven that they can recognize an autistic
seconds. I video about
and
that.
I was like, well, first, again, the whole book is great. You got to get into it. I actually got it on Audible, so it made it even easier to, like, really, absorb it. But, yeah, like, that's so crazy. When you bring that up, it's like, yeah, neurotypical people, they may not be able to put their finger on it and, like, say exactly what it is, but they can tell that there's just something a little bit off about us. And what I've noticed is that instantly makes them think that they can take advantage of us.
Oh, totally.
And it's usually because a lot of us are very literal and they are very manipulative. Like, they are not literal. Most of the things that they say, they don't actually fucking mean. And so if we respond literally, it's like it exposes this
when they try and when you're this has been an ongoing thing in my life, when you respond literally to something and people like look at what all the possible like nuances, what you could have meant by that, and then base like how they view you on this really screwed up idea of what those like nuances could be, like, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, exactly. Like, they're applying subtext where,
like, I heard from people's interpretations of my behavior, and this is the worst thing, right? You correct people, you're like, no, like, I would never, like, that's not my intentions behind that, like, that's not me. And then other people, because again, groupthink, which is another thing that I discuss a lot on my channel. It's all these people who are more socially capable than you have already, like, what is it? Like, what's that term in law where it's like you're already guilty in the public eye?
Oh, like, yeah. Public, by association.
Oh, yeah. But it, like, there's another word for it. But if the public has already determined that you are some mentally ill, like, social anomaly outcast who's just out here to fucking, like, cause shit and, like, cause conflict, like, that's what people's idea was of me. Like, there was always a double entendre about the way that I moved socially that wasn't actually true to my own actions, and I felt like horrible. Like, I, like, it actually led to like a suicide attempt. Like, it was like awful, like, when I was 17. And that's one of the reasons why I can't go back home, is that for multiple reasons. Like, I mean, I can go back home, but it's hard for me because I have PTSD to go back home. I will do whatever it is in my power to not go back home. And I hope to get over that one someday, but people don't realize how much like traumatizing, like, autistic people, like, how, like, we kill ourselves over this. Like, there are lives that are lost. Okay. And I knew it was one of those scenarios where I was like, I knew that people on the low knew that I wasn't a bad person, like, deep down inside, that they knew that I was not necessarily aware and not a bad person because of the values that I uphold. And I've always been a very moral person, but at the same time, me being no nuanced, me not wanting to spread misinformation, like, all these, I guess, aggressive personality traits cause people, like, cognitive dissonance. No, it was insane. And I just felt like a monster my whole life. Like, truly, people have made me feel the amount, I can't, and it's hard, I know that you're going to get it, but if I was explaining this to neurotypical, like, a neurotypical person, they would not get it. They would see someone with a raging victim complex. This is something that only, like, especially marginalized autistic people experience, because white autistic boys are commonly infantilized, which is also bad. That's not good at all either. Neither one is good. But when you're a marginalized autistic person and you have an intersectional identity, you are more likely to be demonized. That feeling, it's a certain amount of people that can relate to that and understand that. And I think that's something that we're both trying to spread awareness for. You know what I mean?
So frequently, like, I'm so sorry that you experienced that, because I know exactly what you're going through. I can't tell you how many times someone has literally interpreted my silence as arrogance, as who the fuck does she think she is? She thinks she's too good to talk to us. And it's like, you're not understanding how arrogant you sound. You're so determined to have my attention that you're making me a problem. Why should you be the main character in my life? I don't, neurotypical people and their group think, they don't realize that everybody doesn't feel like they should be the main character in other people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, but that's how they think. So they assume everyone else is doing that, and they assume everyone is playing the same game as them, and they apply those rules and that subtext to the things that you say when all you're doing is being 100% direct. Like, I'll never forget this one moment, and I really wasn't being a smart ass, but I realized in retrospect that they believed that I was being a smart ass. I was sitting at my desk and I had earbuds in. And this guy came up to me, he ranks well above me, and he goes, oh, are you on the phone? I clearly wasn't on the phone because I was just sitting there listening to a podcast. I wasn't talking, but it was that, are you on the phone? And I just, I answered him literally. I said, no, I'm listening to a podcast. And then I registered on his face that he was like very fucking annoyed. And I didn't realize until after that interaction that he was trying to shame me for having my earphones down. Yeah. And he wanted me to be like, oh no, I'm sorry. No, I'm not listening. No, I'm not on the phone. But I was not
giving my utmost full attention, sir.
Right. And it's like, you know, you like, look, you needed my attention. You came over and you got it. That's all you had to do was say, hey, Tierra, can I talk to you for a second? But no, you needed me to feel like I needed to like snatch my earphones out just because you walked by. You're not important. You're just some dude with a title. You're not somebody that like runs my life and that I'm supposed to quake. You know, like when I think about the hierarchical system and the social hierarchy and things like that, it's so dumb. It is so dumb and pointless. And it's also very relative as well. Like, especially me coming from like a corporate world, it's like once you're outside of that bubble, you can walk down the street and you will not have the same impact on people as you have on them within those walls. So that's why you go on. That's why you go on this like power trip, because this is what you need to validate yourself. And then you get mad when you see people like us, autistic people, who usually once we start to heal and accept ourselves and stop masking and we express ourselves authentically, we attract attention no matter where we go because we stand out, whether it's positive or negative attention, but we impact people. People remember us. And that threatens them because they're like, how is it that this person who they perceive as below them, as someone that is not as worthy of respect as them, how is it that this person is like getting all this attention or has all of this confidence and has all of this audacity and doesn't look at me as someone who is like, you know, as special as them? Who is this? And it makes them fucking glitch. And then they treat you
they glitch, bro. You're right. They really do.
They teach you like you're some fucking demon who's like out to get them. Oh, you're being manipulative. And I'm like, you know what? Like you said earlier, as soon as people make up their mind about you, it's confirmation bias. They will filter everything you do through a lens of confirming what they already believe.
Yeah, but also what the majority is with their ass. It will align with what the majority thinks of you, and then all the time. And it doesn't matter. Like, even if you just have a normal conversation, like you're just in a normal group conversation with people who are holistic, they often will like listen to the words that you're saying and not take it with like the same 100% that they are like listening to everyone else. Like, I've always talked about how I felt like I'm like a person cut in half. Like, I kind of move throughout life as feeling like people treat me as half of what they would treat the average person. Like, and then if I tell it to the wrong person, they think I have some major fucking victim complex. But, and I used to gaslight myself in regards to that. I used to be like, you know, I used to just listen to what other people thought of me. And then that became my image of who I was, even though it was not true to me. Mm-hmm. But like, it's true. Like, people really do treat marginalized autistic people in this world and give them half the respect that they would a normal, like the average person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know why? Because what we stand for and what's intrinsic to us. So this is my theory. We are overall, because we are very logical, straightforward, honest, you know, truth-seeking, justice-seeking people, that is a threat to the hierarchical system.
Yeah.
And so they inherently see us as beneath them because we're not willing to be as cutthroat and as heartless and as rigidly adherent to this arbitrary system as them. And so it's like, you're not playing the game. You're weak because within the system, people who are genuine are seen as either, people who are generous are seen as either you are someone who can be manipulated or you're being manipulative. Right. They don't see it as this.
I'm either one or the other. Like, all
in people's eyes. Yeah.
Like, I hate more so than all of this, like when people like start rumors or say like create this misconception that you're like a liar and you're a manipulative person and you're just out here to stomp on other people, like, and then I'm like, dude, if you understood anything about my disorder, you would know that autistic people lie less than allistics. Yes, we do lie. We are capable of lying. But in comparison to allistics, we actually lie less statistically.
Yes.
Like directness and honesty are part of our personality. And yes, does that apply to, I'm not going to say that that applies to everyone, because then there are fucking people like Elon Musk in this world, you know, right? You cannot, I know, like, it doesn't apply to everyone, especially like to say that to someone who's like a marginalized autistic person. It is like heartbreaking, like to spread something like that, because you don't want to take accountability for your egregious fucking social behavior. Like, that's nuts.
Exactly. Because it's so normalized and it hasn't been pointed out to them. They just think this is how it is. This is how everyone is. And the assumptiveness. I always say, me and my sister were talking about this not too long ago, where I'm like, I feel like neurotypical people literally live their life based on scripts and roles. And it's like, where do I fit in? What role am I playing? And they're never really true to themselves. And that's why they glitch.
Made me think of something.
That's why they glitch when we go off script. When we're not fitting into this prescribed box of how they think, if we're not playing along, we stick out like a glitch in the matrix.
Yeah. That just made me think of, you know, the game House that kids play?
Like, just like mom and dad?
I'm mommy, daddy, or the baby, whatever.
Yeah.
Family, like the most like allistic game. Like that's the game that allistics play, right?
Pretty much.
When I was a kid, like there were people, like I'd be like around people who were playing that. And it's not like they would never invite me to play that, bitch. Like they already knew back then. But this one time I went up to them and I was like, you know, House doesn't really make sense if you think about it, because you're actually children and you can go home to your mommy and daddy. So like, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And they just looked at me like, what the fuck?
Exactly. You know what?
I was like, bro, these people lack imagination so bad. That's what I remember.
That their imagination is literally them just copying what they've seen before. You're exactly right.
Yeah, but it wasn't the exact, like they would just play over like the exact same thing over and over again. And obviously they would, and one of the big things about House is that the hierarchical values of the house, like the daddy versus the mommy, like they really upholded those structures of hierarchy even back then. And I just always thought it was like ridiculous. But I was also the type of person who was like swinging around trees by myself and then reciting The Nightmare Before Christmas out loud over and over again. Like, that was literally how I fucking played. Like, it was literally, I just need to reenact Tim Burton movies. And, like, people probably thought I was schizophrenic, for real. Because I was just talking to myself out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally.
No, but you bring up a good point. Like, and that kind of feeds into what I was saying about, like, the roles and the scripting. A lot of the times, like, you can see the difference if you look at kids in their play. Like, the kids who either, like, play by themselves or they make up stories with their toys, are that may be an early indicator of them being a little bit more spicy than the others, because if the way you play is by imitating what you've seen before, that shows a lack of imagination. It's
also
not imaginative
with dolls, like when they play with dolls. I watched a video a while ago on like ABA therapy, and they were talking about how like one of like the biggest benchmarkers of an autistic child is if they don't like, if they're playing, I guess the interplay with the dolls is not, you know, what, like what you say, like they would be like a neurotypical child would literally put their baby to sleep at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I was like, what? People put their baby dolls to sleep? Like, my ass just like smacking them together. Or do you want to hear a funny story?
Yes.
This is actually,
I always love to hear a funny
story. I have never told this on my account before. I told this to the woman who diagnosed me with autism, but this is like an ongoing, this is my reaction to a doll growing up. So I'm an only child, which is odd because I'm Italian and usually Italian families have a lot of fucking kids. And, you know, I'm a second gen immigrant, especially in a situation like that, like a lot of the family just have a fuck ton of children. at least two. Mm-hmm. And my parents were thinking, like, yeah, I think we want another kid. And so they kind of did like a test to see how I would react to like a doll that was like, that they were going to be like, oh, like, this is your sibling, right? Like a situation mm-hmm. like that. So it was a family dinner at my Nana and Nono's house. And so they brought out this doll called Shushu, which is really, I don't know, something about the name itself. But they handed me this doll and I just started fucking flipping out and having a meltdown. Like I started biting its face and like,
oh, no.
And like smacking it against the floor. And my family was just watching it like what the fuck is this? Like, cause I was old enough to be able to be like, oh, dolly, like, oh my dolly. Like I was old enough to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But like my reaction to it, like, was the reason my parents were like, okay, we're not going to have a second kid.
Oof. Hey, I mean, look, who knows if that was an accurate experience? I think you would have been able to tell the difference between an inanimate object and like a little sibling, but
yeah, I
find that hilarious.
Yeah, I definitely knew that it was a doll. I just, my reaction to it in retrospect is just so funny. And I would, like, yeah, I, like, freaked out over the strangest thing growing up. Yeah, really not normal. Like, I'm like, how did nobody know? Like, even the fact that I could not even be in daycare, like, I did not last a week in either daycares. Like, I lasted a month in the second one, but, like, meltdown central. Like, I could not coexist in that environment whatsoever. But it's crazy to look back at that and be like,
yeah,
nobody said anything.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I've been thinking about that made me think about a few things from my childhood that I've been able to reframe or revisit through an autistic lens. And I'm just like, firstly, I was definitely a rigid rule follower. I'll get to that one second. The first one is I remember having a meltdown my first day of kindergarten. I cried so hard when my mom was trying to leave me there. And like, I'll never forget it. I'm 34 years old and I still remember being dropped off for kindergarten because it's like a core memory. I screamed and cried and I remember being so terrified that my mom wasn't there. And then eventually I like just kind of numbed myself out. And I learned how to like self-soothe because after that it was easier to go to school, but I never actually really enjoyed it. I just was like, you know, but I met my best friend in kindergarten and she's like the opposite. She's an extrovert. So she came up to me and sat next to me. And that's how we became friends because she decided to talk to me. I'm like, okay, cool.
She's now your friends. Best friend?
Yeah, I actually just saw her.
Oh my God. Yay. And, I love her.
Yeah, so I was her maid of honor in her wedding. And her daughter is going to be 2 in February. So I got to see her little fat little face. And she's so cute. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so
I love that's like wholesome as fuck. Because I relate to that heavy. Like my best friend I met in the first grade. Mm-hmm. And like she is ADHD. Like, you know, this isn't. And she also has like. I don't know if she was diagnosed with a level, but I would say this bitch is either like moderate to severe. Like it's like, so like she's like bordering on severe territory, but that's why we like got along so well. Like she understood social rules much better than I did. So she was like my mother friend, and our entire relationship growing up was us just being the most weirdest fucking people in private. And her going back and like, you know, going to the social higher. It was like she was masking like her like ADHD, right? And like was putting on this like face of like, I'm a neurotypical in front of everyone else. And then it was kind of beautiful that, you know, when we were together, especially alone, like we could just, she could be herself around me. Yeah. Right. And, no, she's my best friend till this day. I'm actually going to Barbados on December 20th to hang with family. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's and fine. I'm spending Christmas and New Year's there with my family and her family. So I'm like really hyped because, you know, she's always had family in Barbados. Like her grand is from Barbados, and she's always gone back and forth there, and ever since we were younger, and I'd be like, man, I like really want to go. So like finally at 22, I'm going to Barbados. So I'm like really I'm excited. I need this vacation. We both need this vacation. If there's anyone that deserves this vacation, it's me and Zadie.
1,000%. That's awesome. Well, girl, have a lot of fun. You know, do your thing. I can't wait to see pictures and hear about it, girly. I'm not gonna act like I'm not jealous. I really need a freaking vacation myself, but trust me, I will be treating myself to a vacation as soon as I am able to. But yeah, no. So going back to reframing things from our childhood, I remember that I was when I learned about like the rigid adherence to rules and being very literal. I remember this is me exposing myself. these are a lot of like traumatizing events. Like I'll never forget them. They're just like kind of core memories. But I remember in second grade, we're all sitting on the carpet for our teacher to read to us in the afternoon. And I remember sitting there with my hand raised and I'm like, I really had to pee. I had to pee so bad. But I was sitting there and the teacher, she looked at me several times but didn't call on me. And so I just sat there and peed on myself. And then everybody was like, you know, my mom, she came up to the school to bring me like a change of pants. But my mom and even like the nurse and the guidance counselor was like, why didn't you just get up and go to the bathroom? And I was like, because the teacher didn't call on me to let me go. And so like, it didn't dawn on me.
Confused now. Could kids just go to the bathroom? Because I thought that as well.
Exactly. Like, no, that's not the rule. The rule is not exactly. Now? I don't think you can. I think you still have to get permission to go to the bathroom, but maybe you can. I don't know. It's been forever since I've been in school, but I just remembered. I was in second grade. You could not go to the bathroom. You couldn't leave the class without asking. And I was sitting there with my hand raised, bouncing my legs. I remember sitting with my legs crossed and I was like this. And a teacher just kept reading. And I saw her look up at me a couple of times, but she didn't call on me. I don't know why to this day. And I just sat there and peed on myself. And they were more mad that I peed on myself than that the teacher didn't call on me to let me go to the bathroom. I'm like, well, why didn't you just get up and go to the bathroom? And I just remember being confused as to why I felt like I was now in trouble. I'm like, why didn't I break the rules? Because they're the rules. Like, you know, it's so weird. And you know, but like for the longest time that experience, and I didn't understand it myself. I was like, you know, as I got older, you know, and started to learn more of the social rules and I would think about those things. I'm like, yeah, why didn't I just get up? But then I would think about it again. I was like, I know why I didn't get up, because the teacher didn't fucking call on me. And the rule was I couldn't just get up and leave. And it's not stupid. I'm not dumb for not breaking a rule. That goes into the whole argument that like neurotypical people say that we have a deficit because we don't have flexible morals. Like how backwards is that? You haven't heard of that? Yes, because we have a rigid, they say we have a rigid adherence to our morals. And so it doesn't make any fucking sense to think that it's a deficit to have.
No, but I mean, it makes sense that they would say that to us.
Right, exactly.
Like, I have been called a lot of not so nice things for wanting accountability in regards to my abuser. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to get into this, but definitely that must be how they view me. Because you get called things like obsessive. You get called things like, you know, like, again, like not everything is black and white. Like they say in Wednesday, I'm sure you saw that. But it's like, okay, so let this pattern continue and watch more people get hurt. Like, are you serious? Are you?
Because that's exactly what's happening.
It's like, are you serious? The evidence
is
right in front of your face. It's not even, it used to be a more nuanced situation, but here now, with a lot of different updates on the situation, it really isn't nuanced. Like it's just obvious at this point. So it's like, I can't give any of the people involved any excuses anymore, because it's like, okay, all the evidence is right in front of your face. Like a lot of this is public knowledge now. And a lot of like the red flags are public knowledge, and you can continue to make the wrong decisions and, you know, let people get hurt. If that makes me rigid, It doesn't make sense to me.
Like we get called SJWs. We get called like these. You just want to. You just so obsessive. And it's like, it's nothing wrong with knowing where you stand. And it's not even about being rigid and having like these like immovable social structures. The things that we are so quote unquote rigid about are literally black and white, right and wrong situations. Because if you introduce to us, a lot of us, new information about something, even if it's like a deeply held belief, if it is true factual information that contradicts us, usually we do not let cognitive dissonance ask the way that they do. And we are able to change a perspective, but we're not going to change our mind over something that is black and white and irrefutable, like people's rights, people's right to exist, how our brains work, who we actually are, what's actually going on with us. That's not for up for fucking debate.
Yeah,
it's not.
I totally agree. Yeah, especially if someone has pervasively violated the rights of people and it's like a long-term pattern of people being traumatized by someone's else's misbehavior. Like, it's like how like the rose-colored glasses are just so intense. And a lot of the time, I've definitely thought about this, and I did a lot of research in regards to writing my show, because for a while, that's why I got into psychology, because I could not comprehend why people didn't care more about my situation, or people called me these things, or why he got away with so much. I like that puzzled me so much that I went completely like, I just got super hyper focused on psych. And it was my special interest for like 4 to 5 years. It was one of my most longstanding special interests. And like, I've learned a lot, and a lot of these, you know, the fact that we're not less as flexible, it just gets more and more intensified if someone hierarchically is like a white dude, right? Like that's the way that it is. Like, people's morals are just so out of line and completely flexible. And it sucks to see people who are also marginalized, like, continue to enable and worship like a white dude who is just like doing heinous things to other people. Because it's like, have you not learned from history or anything? Like, you took history classes. You don't live under a fucking rock. All of these tactics are like literally white supremacy tactics that have existed for a long, long time, right?
Like, lack of ability is, we have systems-based thinking, so we're able to connect those dots and see how it fits. But something that I've recognized, and not just me, but like, I see that a lot of other people are starting to pick up on this, and we can take like the things that happened recently, like mass shooters and stuff like that.
Yeah,
they keep showing them as like, these are single actors, and they're not getting to the same source, the same root of hatred that has inspired all of their acts.
You're gonna trigger and narrow them.
I'm just saying, look, we can get in there into 1 second, but like, this is so, because of our systems-based thinking, I like to call it spiderweb thinking, or Erica, she calls it her computer brain.
Yeah.
Any way you want to put it, our networking ability makes this super fucking obvious to us. We just like, we see the pattern, but it's like trying to explain that to an holistic person, but especially a neurotypical holistic, it's like they think that you're thinking too hard. It's like, that's a stretch. These two things are related. And that's because you're looking at the most surface level and you didn't even dig like to the very next level. If you got even below,
or they ask you that, they're like, bro, it's not that deep. Like,
and I'm like, it is that deep. Like, you're just because you have it, just because me as a Harry Potter fan, like, just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon.
Yeah, literally, Ronald. Like,
you know what I mean? But like, just because your capacity or your program to literally just look at the surface level and move beyond it, just because you don't see it that way doesn't mean it's not that way. But we're the conspiracy theorists, or we're thinking too hard, or it's not that deep. And I'm like, every time someone says that to me, I just want to like smack them in their fucking face and be like, think, rub two fucking brain cells together for like a minute, please.
But here's my theory. I think that these people who are supposedly blind to these situations, I think that they intrinsically know that who they're enabling or what they're excusing is bad. But there's all that hierarchical pressure for them to just ignore it, right? Because it's more beneficial for them to uphold these toxic systems than for them to listen to someone who is, again, especially a marginalized autistic person, like, because yes, it's the probably the more moral thing to do to listen to someone who has this systemizing ability, who speaks reason. And I truly believe that a lot of bystander people do like hear us speak and go, okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. But I don't want to lose my friends. I don't want social conflict. If I align myself with you, I'm going to lose my entire social circle. And where's my social dopamine, right? Like that. And that to me is just the most estranged, cowardice thinking. Like I look down on that to the like, and then they are like, oh, you look down on that? You look down on that? Like, oh, I guess this proves what everyone else has been saying about you. Like, it's like, I don't understand. Like, it's like, she thinks she's better than me. She thinks she's more like moral than me, like, because she's, I don't fucking know, but the list goes on and I'll never be able to understand that. And hopefully with my show, like one of the things that I hope to provoke in other people is to reinforce that. Yes. Sometimes it is that deep. Like, yep. And Alex is the main character in my show. She's not fucking wrong in this situation whatsoever. And she has seen this shit show pattern go unchecked since like elementary school. That's like the whole, like, it's literally the pattern of the main antagonist has been there since elementary school and has affected a whole bunch of people's lives and derailed a lot of people's lives for the worst.
How about this, Jaden? Give us a synopsis. Like, give us your elevator pitch for God Bless America. Because I know you and I have spoken about your show quite a few times, but to my audience, this may be their first introduction to your show. So let's welcome back a little bit and give them the elevator pitch for God Bless
America. You want me to whip out my world Bible? Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if I can read you the entire like story pitch, but yeah, I'll read it up to a certain.
I would say this. Give us like an overall like. Okay, so I know it's inspired by it's inspired by true events. And kind of maybe like a synopsis of maybe the first episode or like an introduction to that world.
So the story is, after an altercation between two teenage boys goes terribly wrong, resulting in the death of Mason Carter, the city of Reno, Nevada is changed forever. Hunter Grimes, Mason's troubled best friend, is in litigation for his supposed involvement. News travels fast and Reno is quickly sent into a frenzy, resulting in constant media presence and a televised trial. Is the young brooding Hunter guilty of involuntary manslaughter, or was this all a terrible mistake? So the thing with this is that Hunter and Mason got into a bit of a disagreement in his basement one night after a party, and somehow Mason fell on a glass table and split his head open. So why that happened or how that happened is, you know, you're not going to pull the truth out of Hunter because he is a chronic liar. Not only that, but like they were the only two people there and Hunter waited 3 hours to call the cops. So that's why he's being like, that's like negligence, right? To let your friend bleed out on the floor. Like, why did he do that? I guess that's like the mystery. I didn't want for this to be like a very stereotypical case of like this guy like an evil dude who's like a murderer, like that I the whole point of the show is to revert all of those stereotypes and just turn it all on your head and be like, you know, people like this exist in your classrooms, at your workplaces. It's not always as extreme as it is in the movies where they're, you know, like robbing banks or serial killing. Like, let's be realistic here. That's one of like the things that I think I do best in the show. It's kind of again taking off those rose colored glasses for the audience and being like, this is what happens behind the scenes that everyone is ignoring, and I'm shoving it in everyone's faces and going like, deal with it as a writer, as a creator. So I'll continue on to that. Mason's sister Alex is convinced it wasn't a mistake. However, not many people believe her. The police are suspiciously lazy. Hunter's friends continue to vouch for him, but nothing will deter Alex on her quest for the truth. She's known from personal experience that Hunter's relationships with others are far from ordinary. Hunter has been quietly abusing boys since elementary school. I can't read you the rest on that list, but I will skip to the end that goes, with all odds stacked against her, Alex must garner the strength and courage to take down the villain that once approached her as a hero. So that's essentially the concept.
I love it. I am, well, you know, and once you're able to put out more information, I definitely would be happy to talk about it, because I know there's a little bit more, like, when it comes to intrigue and, like, challenging the status quo. And just the simple fact that the two protagonists or the main characters are autistic characters written by an autistic person is really exciting for me, because most of the time, if we get any kind of representation, we are represented from an holistic lens. And so a lot of the times our representation, if it's overt, all it does is perpetuate stereotypes. We are seeing nowadays with current characters and a revisit of classic characters of seeing a lot of coded autistic characters. But it's going to be really refreshing to see overtly autistic characters that are just like completely subverting the stereotype of what people think of when they think of autism, and especially when they associate it with what is the face of autism, which are white males.
And the interesting thing about it is that one of the biggest aspects of why I love writing for not just one but two autistic characters who are twins, and it's a boy and a girl, and their experiences and who they are personally are vastly different from each other. Like their presentations of autism, their interests, like I guess who they are, like, and it's also different because Mason's a white boy who's always known that he has had autism, and you know, he gets infantilized, Alex gets demonized by people. They have two completely, he's more introverted, you know, cannot look you in the eyes. She, you know, is definitely more masculine, more out there, more outspoken. He's more of a follower. She's more of a leader, right? They're two completely different experiences. And, you know, their traumas are both equally, they're both valid, but it's like looking at the show from an intersectional lens, you can't help but be like, okay, Mason gets excused a bit too much with his behaviors. And she's very coded. Like, she doesn't know that she's on the spectrum in the first season. That's kind of introduced. It's not really a spoiler because she's so coded that everyone would know, including having a sibling who's a twin that's also.
And then there's
this one scene where her and Mason are, you know, they're on like skateboards down the street, and they're like dressed in some like weird ass clothing, just flying down the fucking street with sunglasses. And someone, like, there's a couple, like, younger kids that are laughing at them. And one of the kids goes, like, you know, you shouldn't laugh at them. Like, they have, my mom says they have Asperger's. And the other kid, goes, like, what does Asperger's mean? And the other one goes, it means that they have burgers for butts. And the other boys are, like, cool. Like, so, like, there's a lot of, like, different references about the two of them. And I think that it's important for me to have written two, because it just goes to show, like, an audience member who might not know anything about autism, they will look at that and go, wow, you meet one person on the spectrum and that's one person on the spectrum, right? We're not all the same. These are vastly different experiences. And yeah, so that was important for me as a writer, to not just have one, but to have, you know, two, right? And out of everyone in the entire series, who the viewer is rooting for the most are Alex and Mason. And I thought that's one of the best aspects of the show. Like, you, like, regardless of who you are, whether you are neurotypical or holistic, this show is written in the way for you to be able to empathize with those characters the most. And it is, even though there is no carry on in the narration, it truly is like their story, like in the end. Like, there's a lot of pieces and a lot of puzzle pieces and a lot of people involved, but again, as a viewer, you probably will root for them the most, you probably will like them the most, you know, empathize with them the most. So I felt like that was a really cool lens that I have on the show.
Yeah, I'm okay. Super excited, girly. Like, I've been rooting you on ever since I heard about it. And it's definitely needed in the space that more overt and multifaceted spectrum of representation, because we are not a monolith. But speaking of coded autistic characters, that is a good segue into something that we bonded over very early as well. And I saw it as your profile picture. So I knew that you were a Daria fan for a while. And I was like, oh my God, I grew up on Daria. We're showing our difference in age. I'm about 12 years older than you.
Yeah.
So I remember Daria when it was on TV, like, for the first time. And so it's like, it's still something that like resonates with me to this day, but going back and watching it now, understanding who I am, it makes me understand even more why I related to Daria so much, even though on the surface we are nothing alike. Like the way I grew up and the way I am genuinely like a friendly kind of like person who likes to reach out to other people and make them feel good. Whereas Daria is definitely not that kind of person at all. But I heavily related to her so fucking much growing up, and now going back and looking at her and seeing how much the autistic community has embraced her and kind of canonized her as like, you know, an autistic icon is amazing. And I love the fact that you started kind of like dissecting and doing kind of like a TikTok mini series on decoding the Daria series. I love that, and I think it's gonna be I think those kind of things are needed to help make it make sense to holistic people what we're talking about when we say we're everywhere and we don't look like what we think we look like.
Yeah. No, totally. I think what spurred that on was because I like ended up on Daria Talk like very early on. Like I was just watching edits, watching people talk about it. And there were a lot of people who really demonized her character and called her a bully, like called her all these like awful things. And I remember thinking like, wait, did we watch the same show? Because I don't see it that way at all. Mm-hmm. And like, especially people who were like empathizing with Quinn more than her, right? And I'm like, and then I'd be like, I'm pretty sure Quinn refuses to acknowledge that Daria is her sister at school. Like, I think if you were autistic and your sibling was holistic, and I don't agree with people who are like, oh, maybe Quinn's autistic as well. No. There's some people that say that. I'm like, I don't know where you got that from, but I gotta say that's the whole point of the show, that she's not like her sister in any way. And she and it's like throughout the entire series, it's almost like reactive abuse. Like Quinn will like say something rude to Daria and then she'll give like a snarky jab back, right? But Daria doesn't really say mean shit unless she's unprovoked or she's trying to make a grander like statement on a situation that's actually very thought-provoking, right? Like she's always punching up. And it's like for people to be like, Daria's abusive, like she's a bully. I'm like, what? Like you are not looking at this show from an intersectional lens like not that. And I had some people comment that who were like, I'm also autistic. And I'm like, so lateral ableism, like you need to work some stuff out. Either like you like internally hate yourself, or if you think Daria is a bully, then maybe consider for a moment that you're not actually autistic. Either one or the other. You're either suffering from an insane internalized ableism, or you think you're morally superior because you can mask better than Daria, because Daria is not good at masking. She's literally like my inner monologue that I don't share out loud, but she's out loud.
No filter. She's the definition of no filter. You don't like
people that are like not as good as masking as you are, or you're probably not autistic. If you think Daria, like the whole point of that show was to subvert so many tropes and to put this outcast, not as a side character or as a villain in the story, but to have the entire show be from her perspective, right? And her and Jane's perspective, who I feel like is like ADHD coded. Like she is a very talented artist, absolutely, but struggles in school, struggles with direction. Like they just seem very like in line with one another. And surprisingly, it just annoyed me how people perceive Daria. And I'm like, well, if no one else is going to do it or say it, then you know, I'm the queen of saying the elephant in the room out loud. So let's let's just do it right here, right now. So that's, and I feel so strongly about that character. I really do. So,
yeah, it's weird to me to think that people would see Daria as a bully. But as soon as you said it, I'm like, yeah, of course there would be some fucking Quinn apologists because they recognize her vapid, vapid and rigid social adherence, and like nothing matters but her social standing, and like everything is about how she can get what she wants from people. She has three guys after her all the time, always mixes them up. They don't really care, and then they don't care either as long as they get the hot girl.
Right,
and there's always this jockeying even within the fashion club. And
but yeah, but the fashion club apologists too, like they're all so mean to each other, like especially Sandy, who's like insanely struggling with like internalized, like she hates, she doesn't like other women and she's mean to other women. And that's the whole point. Like everyone is bullying each other in that group, but they have this facade that they're cool, that they're fashionable. And you see that kind of happen a lot with fashion as like, you know, an interest in neurotypicals. Like if you like see through the superficial cracks of, yeah, I guess they look good, right? But a lot of them like are very mean to each other. And it's so discouraging for people who are plus size and autistic, like interested in fashion. You have two double things right on top of each other. And you pretty much have like, you know, an unspoken sign on you that says not welcome. Like that's how people perceive you in that. And it's just, it's terrible for a lot of creatives or just people in the arts in general. Like you're led to believe that the outcasts are the ones pursuing the arts, right? But it's like, what happens if you go to a school full of outcasts and you're the outcast and like you're kind of like misled to believe that all these people are out here, all these people are weird, all these people are just like me. And then you realize you're like, damn, like I'm not welcome anywhere. Like that was
what
like
if you're the Wednesday Addams.
Yeah, I know. She said that. Like what happens when you're an outcast at the school of outcasts? That was literally me in art school, bro. Yeah, no, seriously.
No, but it's so true. You know, it's because even though we're neural spicy and there's so many, like, I feel like most of the people who are drawn to the arts and are the outcasts are somewhere on the spectrum. We grow up in this very neurotypical world and we're conditioned and traumatized into internalizing all of these things that is like, it keeps so many people from realizing that they are playing an active role in perpetuating their own oppression, right? Because you are oppressed if you are sticking to the system, because right, you are withholding yourself, you are watering yourself down, you're not being your true self, all to squeeze into this box of something that other people have prescribed for you, and it's not authentic to who you are.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I now choose to say holistic instead of neurotypical is because in art school, again, a lot of them are neurospicy. A lot of them have OCD or BPD or like, you know, especially ADHD. Like art school is often riddled, like probably the majority of kids are definitely somewhere on the mild to like severe, like ADHD spectrum, usually mild to moderate. But my experience as an autistic person in art school is vastly different from someone with ADHD who understands, you know, social cues, right? And who, you know, when they're like, ADHD people miss social cues too. It's like, yeah, if they interrupt someone, you know, if they, you know, talk ad nauseum, right? But it's like, it's so not the same as being autistic socially. Mm-hmm. Like the social deficits in autism are on a whole other plane. And that's why I usually say, like, that's one of the reasons why I'm like, I'm not saying neurotypical anymore, because let's be real here. Like a lot of holistics with ADHD or a lot of holistics who also have some sort of neurodivergency still uphold this like really awful hierarchical social system. And it's sad because a lot of the time in these cases, it probably comes from like some sort of internalized ableism, definitely, of having to like, you know, like a lot of people have been in, like, have had IEPs. You know, I find like there were a lot of people with IEPs at art school. And it's like, you know, yes, we don't have the same disorder, but we all had learning disabilities. You know, we all had deficits. It's like, why am I so outcasted compared to all these other, I guess, more socially functioning,
right?
but it's completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. But speaking of Wednesday, girl, again, I only have 2 episodes left, so no spoilers, but that's kind of I TikTok made me do it moment. It's like I wasn't even gonna watch it until I saw all of Altizzy Talk blowing up and talking about how she's such a coded autistic character. And so I was like, you know what, whatever, let me watch it. And I'm so glad I did, because I literally started watching it last night and I've already gotten through the first 6 episodes. And
last night.
Yeah, I just started watching it last night. Yeah, because like I was like, I wasn't really like, I've seen the original Addam Family like way back in the day. I liked it, but it wasn't anything that I was like super into. Right. But again, like I literally kept seeing it come up on my For You page all the fucking time. So I was like, all right, whatever. Like, I've never really been pressured into watching the show because I didn't see Game of Thrones or, you know, I didn't watch Scandal or Grey's Anatomy or anything like that. But for some reason, I was like, you know what? If Altizzy Talk is vouching for it, let me watch it. And I'm so glad I did. I'm watching this show and I fucking love Wednesday with a passion. I love her. I love everything about her. I love her bluntness. I love her willingness to just be herself at all times and like really show no shame. You can tell like she's not afraid or
ashamed. She does not give a fuck.
If I don't give a fuck was a person, it would be Wednesday. And not so this is why it's so obvious that she is like coded as autistic, because just as much as she doesn't give a fuck about the social hierarchy and what other people perceive of her, she still does what's right because it's right. So she acts out and she seeks out her justice in some very destructive and dark ways.
Yeah.
But she's not just violent for no reason, or she doesn't just do things for no reason.
Yeah. She's not a rebel without a cause. Like,
exactly. She goes to bat for people. She has a heart. She shows empathy. She shows cognitive empathy. She understands. And I'm like, yes, I love it. And she's written in a way where it's like, yeah, you know, because this is how I know that, like, people who aren't autistic have been resonating with her or like her, because some of the people who I've seen who have been like staunch advocates for her being a coded autistic character have been getting a lot of hate for saying that. And they're like, oh, you guys want to make everybody autistic? She's just quirky. She's just this. And I'm like, go back and look at almost every quirky girl character, and I bet you she's somewhere neurospicy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like the quirky, like, oh, she's just so different. Like, I don't know if you've seen the series Breaking Down Legally Blonde by Spice Fan.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love Elle too.
Definitely on the spectrum, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. And that's another character that I remember loving so much. And I grew up and too. On the surface, we're so different. And then if you look at her and
Me and her are nothing alike whatsoever, but I always had a respect for her. Sure.
I just loved her. She just always spoke to me like her pureness. And so, then you look at her and Daria. Right?
Yeah,
couldn't be different. Different on the surface, but when you break them down and you look at it below the surface, you see how they are like pretty much the same. And that's what we need to do, is like break down. And that's kind of a good way to kind of like loop it back and kind of close it out. Like with deconstructing neurodivergence, these are the kind of conversations that I want to do, is bring that intersectional lens, show how multifaceted autistic people are, and show just like why our limiting belief and our limiting view in what autism is continues to harm autistic people, and also deprives autistic people from all of the great, wonderful things that we can do and contribute.
Totally.
Because they continue to infantilize and dismiss us.
Yeah.
Girly, oh my goodness. I am so glad that you joined me for this episode. Before we go, I wanted to give you an opportunity to leave with any closing thoughts, any last things that you wanted to say, and also make sure you let everyone know where they can find you and your work online.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I have to say is all the people who want to fucking say Daria is not autistic and make fun of autistic people for being like, this character is coded, shut the fuck up. We are a massively unrepresented like group of people. okay, you don't understand, a lot of you, especially like, you know, like the white people, white, you know, abled people, you're never going to understand what it's like to be unrepresented to this fucking extent. So shut your fucking mouths, because if we identify with the character, let us have that character, you know, in a weird way, in a completely other different. It was like when people were like, Ariel's not fucking black. It's like, who the hell, let people have their characters. Like, what, it is rooted in something else. It is rooted in something sinister. The thing that pushes you to write something like that is rooted in some serious ass bullshit. So that's what I have to say. Like, literally shut the fuck up. They're like, when you, it is just, it's beautiful when people who feel unrepresented feel represented. And more importantly, like, I just want to thank you for, like, you know, just having me on here, and also just meeting you and coming, like, when your TikTok account was one of the first autistic creators that popped up on my For You page. And honestly, it's helped me a lot. Like, I always, when I, the first two people that I recommend on Autism Talk, I'm like, bro, you gotta follow T, and you gotta follow. Do you know who Allie Starts a Cult is?
Yes, I love
Allie. I'm like, those are my first two people. I'm like, these are the two baddest bitches on TikTok. Follow them right now. And yeah, no, the I think anyone who slams TikTok advocacy is so, like, they just don't understand. They're just out of line. And I think what these these communities on TikTok that exist, they're so beautiful. They make people feel so seen. It's not just helpful for other people watching, but I guess like the healing experience of knowing that I'm not alone, having other people relate to my experiences, or even find me relatable as a person. Like, I know all the people who like low-key related to me growing up probably all have an autism diagnosis. Like, and you know, from the shadows, right? I'm super hyped for God Bless America. It's going to change the world. It is so good. It's going to be a wake-up call. I think it's going to be a massive wake-up call. Really, I mentioned this before, it'll really rip off those rose-colored glasses off of anybody's faces. And we need more content like that. I'm tired of writers and people just constantly playing safe or playing into tropes. Like, nobody, like film and television or just media in general, it's such a powerful form of activism that is not utilized enough because people are so obsessive with money. So that's usually the route that they go. But I'm tired of things being palpable and just like watered down. I want things to be loud and, you know, in your face. And that's what this show is, because it's stuff like that that changes things. We're not, yes. Nobody does any progress from silence. Like silence, what's that quote that's like, so, like, if you're silent or indifferent about a serious situation, you are aligning yourself with the oppressor. Or if you like water something down, like that's what I truly believe. Like, if any change is going to be made in regards to so many systemic, like deep rooted issues in this world, like we have to be loud. Amen. And that's what I think. I think, yeah.
Amen, girly. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media.
At Jaden Del Bello on Instagram. My second job is Depop reselling. I'm not one of those like basic ass girls who just like, you know, will like completely reprice something to an insane degree. I take a lot of time with curating my new stock. Some of it's like old clothes that I don't want, but a lot of it is stuff that I source out. And I would really appreciate if anyone bought anything from at Jaden Del Bello on Depop, because that is essentially, I guess, it's like a mutual aid, but you get a gift with it, kind nice. Of. So definitely check that out. And you know me, JDB, on TikTok. Yeah, that's mostly, or JadenDelBello.com. You can watch some of my short films that were in festival circuits on there. But yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, girly. Of course. And of course, I'm going to leave all the links to Jaden's social media in the description below. I want to thank you so much again for spending some time with me, Chica. You know, we can chat for forever. That's why I was like, you know what? I had to set a timer. Exactly. I was like, I had to set a timer because at this point, I think this is going to definitely be our longest episode, but it's all, girl, it's all great. And I can't wait to chat with you again. And like you said earlier, I think we could probably have a whole episode where we just kind of like deconstruct
Daria. For real, the quintologists.
Absolutely. But thank you so much for stopping by. And thank you guys so much for spending some time with us. I hope you enjoyed.
Once again, I want to thank you guys for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you want to learn more about Jaden and her series, God Bless America, make sure you check her out on her TikTok at YouKnowMeJDB. All the links for her social media are included in the description. And as always, if you would like to support me, please join the Soul Tribe over on Patreon, patreon.com/TJamaicaPogue. I will be posting more patron exclusive videos, and moving forward, all patrons will get shouted out in all of my YouTube videos in the description. If you go back and look at my most recent vlog post, you'll see that all current patrons have a shout out in the description. Joining me on Patreon is a way that you can show your continuous support and how I can continue to bring you this very valuable content. So thanks again for stopping by, and have a great one.